A jury in South Florida has held that Chiquita Brands, the purveyors of Chiquita bananas, is liable for 8 killings carried out by a right-wing paramilitary group that the company helped to finance in a fertile banana-growing region of Colombia during that country's decades-long civil conflict. The jury ordered Chiquita to pay $38.3 million to 16 family members of farmers and other civilians who were killed in separate incidents by the so-called United Self-Defense Forces of Colombia, a right-wing paramilitary group that Chiquita bankrolled from 1997 to 2004. The company still faces hundreds of similar lawsuits in courts across America, but this is the first one that has resulted in a jury verdict. The company said that it would appeal. It did not say, however, how it could reconcile the fact that the United Self-Defense Forces of Colombia, which the State Department lists as a foreign terrorist group, and Chiquita Brands entered into an agreement whereby the company transferred $1.7 million to the terrorists. I'm John Kiriakou. Welcome to The Whistleblowers. Chiquita is the modern iteration of a notorious predecessor known as the United Fruit Company. The United Fruit Company once owned nearly 2 million acres of land in Guatemala, Honduras, Costa Rica, Belize, and along the coast of Colombia. It was the largest landowner and the largest employer in Central America for more than 50 years, and it had the power and authority to overthrow governments. Indeed, with members of its board of directors that included President Dwight Eisenhower's Secretary of State, John Foster Dulles, and his brother, CIA Director Alan Dulles, the United Fruit Company was able to overthrow the Guatemalan government and replace it with a pro-American military dictatorship in 1954. That solidified the company's preeminence over the Central American economy and gave rise to the term Banana Republic. Although the United Fruit Company was a party to a number of mergers, acquisitions, buyouts, and name changes over the years, it remained a powerhouse in the region, as well as the largest employer and landowner. A series of strikes through the 1970s and 1980s weakened its grip on political power somewhat, but as it turned out, corporate leaders decided to continue operating on the dark side. Executives admitted to the U.S. Justice Department in 2007 that the company had financed a Colombian terrorist group, and it paid a $25 million fine at the time. The saga is not over, however. Juries across America in the coming years will hear more and more testimony about Chiquita, the damage that it's done to Central American communities and families, and its cooperation with and financing of terrorist groups. We're very happy to be joined today by Professor Terry Carl. She's the Gildred Professor of Latin American Studies and Professor Emeritus of Political Science at Stanford University. She earned her bachelor's and master's degrees as well as her PhD from Stanford. Dr. Carl is the recipient of several of the most important academic prizes bestowed by the university and has served as the expert witness in other notorious human rights trials. For example, the murder of Archbishop Oscar Romero, now a Catholic saint, and the massacre of El Mozote, the largest massacre in Latin America in contemporary history. She received the Rio Branco Prize from the Brazilian President Fernando Henrique Cardoso in recognition of her work in fostering academic relations between the United States and Latin America. Dr. Carl, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Before we get into the history of the United Fruit Company, I want to ask you about the most recent news about a jury finding Chiquita liable for the deaths of 8 Colombians. Can you explain this to us? Why in the world would a fruit company be involved with a terrorist group, let alone be financing that terrorist group? And why was it found liable in these deaths?
Well, I can't really answer why they made these decisions. Only they can answer this. But what we can see is that from their decision to re-enter Colombia in 1988, this is Chiquita's decision, to re-enter Colombia in 1988, at the height of violence in the banana-producing regions, from that decision flows everything they did, which ends up at the paying of a paramilitary, of an ultra-right-wing paramilitary founded in this region by the banana plantation owners. What had to be proven in the trial were essentially three things. The first was that this paramilitary actually killed the plaintiffs or the plaintiffs' families, in killed, tortured, or committed extrajudicial killings of the families that were in this particular trial in Florida. So we had to show that, first of all, they were responsible for the killings. The second thing we had to show is that Chiquita paid them, in effect, paying for some of the bullets, the guns, etc., and the violence that was occurring in this region. And the third thing was that Chiquita did this not as a normal business practice, but did and not as extortion, did not do so under duress, but in fact made what the lawyers called a pact with the devil, meaning the AUC, the right-wing paramilitary, to break up the trade unions, to stop labor organizing in that area, to force people off their land so that land could become cheap and could be bought by Chiquita in particular, et cetera. So that's what had to be proven in the trial. That is what was proven in the trial, and therefore Chiquita was found responsible for the murders of the families of the eight plaintiffs in this case. They were awarded almost $39 million for this, and there are many other plaintiffs to come.
This federal court decision strikes me as a very important development in that there are hundreds of such cases pending in federal district courts around the country. This is the first one that has gotten as far as a jury verdict. And even if the company appeals, which it says it will, the decision sets a precedent for the other cases. Tell us how important this verdict was, and what are people saying about it in Colombia and elsewhere in Latin America?
This is a very important precedent. The lawyers believe that this is the first U.S.-based multinational that's ever been held accountable in a trial for its actions in another country. So this has never happened before. You might remember that Chiquita is considered the very first multinational in some ways. So this is a very important precedent. What matters is that in this trial, the plaintiffs were called bellwether plaintiffs. That means they were plaintiffs that actually showed, were exemplars of other plaintiffs. Each plaintiff became a bellwether for a range of other plaintiffs behind, or possible plaintiffs behind them. There could be as many as 5,000 or more victims in this particular story. So in that sense, it opens up a whole can of worms for Chiquita, because many, many more plaintiffs can come forward and charge them using the same evidence of this trial and then their own particular evidence. So that's one thing. The other thing is that I think is very important is that this was covered by all the business magazines like Forbes and others. And it's like a warning shot across the bow of multinationals on how to do business in other countries. This was ruled not a normal business practice, not the quote, what Chiquita claimed, the cost of doing business in Colombia, but in fact, the disregard for the lives of the people who lived in the banana-producing region. And in that sense, it's a very important, precedent.
You touched on these other cases around the country. Are they essentially the same? Chiquita has admitted that it paid $1.7 million to these death squads. The death squads then wantonly killed people, and the company must take responsibility. Is that essentially what these cases are?
The cases are all similar to that. They come from bellwether, the idea of bellwethers again. So each case may be somewhat different based on the individual characteristics of the extrajudicial killings, who was killed, where they were killed, what piece of land was involved, etc. So they may be somewhat different. I do want to say that $1.7 million doesn't sound like very much, but it was considered seed money to get the AUC started, organized, incorporated into an umbrella organization. So it was very important early monies, if I can put it that way. The other thing is, it's not the only monies involved, nor is it the only benefits that the AUC received from Chiquita. These are the funds that could be proven. In other words, these are the checks, the actual payments that the lawyers had evidence of. And that's very important. The other thing that's very important is there's all kinds of in-kind benefits. For example, it is clearly evident that Chiquita's port, it had a private port, was used by the AUC to ship drugs. The AUC was also a drug trafficking paramilitary, to ship drugs, particularly to Europe, from the port on banana boats, on sometimes small banana, what are called lanchas or small speed boats. And these drugs were sent from the port. We don't know how many, but we do know there's some. The other thing that was so important is that this port was used to bring in guns for drugs. In other words, the drug money went out to Europe and the guns came in. And there's a very important case of this that was proven that we were able to use. And in this, the bills of lading for Chiquita said rubber balls. In other words, it said that the shipments that were coming in were rubber balls. And when you opened up the boxes, they were actually AK-47s and ammunition.
Chiquita certainly is not the only fruit company in Latin America. Did other companies do what Chiquita is accused of doing? Did they associate themselves with paramilitary groups or other malign characters?
No, and this is very important because this does all stem from a series of very bad Chiquita decisions stemming from, I would say, the early 90s on. These decisions were particular to Chiquita. If you look at Dole and you look at Del Monte, at least there's no evidence that they did anything like this. What Chiquita did is instead of moving out of Colombia and out of these very violent areas, which other foreign banana companies did, so as not to get involved with the paramilitaries, what Chiquita did instead is it changed, it actually moved in deeper and deeper and deeper.
Thank you, Terry. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to speak with Professor Terry Carl about the history of the United Fruit Company in Latin America. How can a private company accumulate so much power and authority that it can overthrow governments? Stay tuned. Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We're speaking with Professor Terry Carl. She's the Gildred Professor of Latin American Studies and Professor of Political Science Emeritus at Stanford University, and is the recipient of several of the most important and prestigious academic prizes bestowed by the university. She also received the Rio Branco Prize from Brazilian President Fernando Henrique Cardoso in recognition of her work in fostering academic relations between the United States and Latin America. Thanks again for being with us, Professor.
Thank you for inviting me.
Chiquita and its predecessor company, the United Fruit Company, have worked with repressive regimes and terrorist groups for a century. They were the most powerful force in all of Latin America in the 1950s, and they even overthrew governments. They were also credibly accused of using slave labor to work on the banana plantations in Guatemala. How is a company like this still in business? It seems to me that if this were a government, it would have been overthrown decades ago. What do you think?
Now, what's particularly important about what Chiquita did is it not only kept on digging itself in deeper and deeper in this region, but, I mean, it dug a hole for itself and then it dug deeper and deeper. And by this, I mean, it moved from just buying the fruit, the bananas, from local producers to actually buying land, becoming the largest landowner in the area, changing its business practices so that it was deeply involved not only in landholdings that were acquired because of the violence, in large part. In other words, when it's so violent, people flee their lands. And this is, Colombia at this time was producing the greatest amount of out-migration, I believe, in the world, although I cannot verify that right now. But it had a huge out-migration from this region because of the violence. In other words, the terror was forcing peasants off their land. By forcing peasants off their land, Chiquita was able to move in, acquire this land, often acquire it through what they called legal carpentry. That's their language, not mine. Legal carpentry meant that you acquired land in a sketchy way and then found ways to create a legal title to that land. So that also was happening, and that was, as it did that, it got deeper and deeper into the region, more and more involved with a right-wing paramilitary, the AUC.
Take us back to the early days of the United Fruit Company. It actually began as a railroad, expanded into bananas only because one of the original investors ate one, thought it was delicious, and decided to plant them. And then the company really took off by transporting its own bananas on what was a monopoly railroad. It took decades for this to happen. Why was there no regulation or oversight at the time? Is it because it was an American company working in a region with certain governments?
Well, go back to the time you're talking about. As I said, it's the first multinational in some ways. This is the time when the United States is expanding beyond its borders for the very first time. So this is when you get the United States in Latin America in particular. It's the period of time which is the biggest expansion of U.S. interests abroad. Now, the thing that is unusual about the banana companies is it actually creates the market for bananas, and it innovatively figures out how to store bananas so that you can actually ship them to the United States. It creates its own market. It creates its own market with this very, very, it's considered one of the most innovative ad campaigns of all time. You know, it's "I'm Chiquita Banana and I wanna say." And that ad campaign is important in creating this kind of market. So what you see is this expansion, the creation of a market, the moving of bananas from the banana producing regions, which are mostly jungle at this point, and the beginning of big massacres of banana workers. So if your listeners ever read 100 Years of Solitude, my personal favorite book, they'll see that Garcia Marquez, the Colombian writer, has a whole section of that book where he describes the 1928 massacre in Colombia of banana workers and the covering up of that massacre by both Chiquita, what it was then United Fruit, called United Fruit Interests, and the Colombian government. So this is an old practice. What's changed is the way of carrying out the and conducting the practice as the world gets smaller.
I'm interested in how, from a legal perspective, this was permitted to happen, even in early to mid-20th century America. The ethical problems just scream out. The involvement in the United Fruit Company of the Dulles brothers, and as another example, the brother of President Eisenhower's secretary, is so obviously unethical and probably illegal. How is that allowed to happen?
Well, I think one real reason is racism, frankly, because I think that banana workers, excuse me, were considered little brown people. And what is astonishing, not just then, it's not so astonishing then in that the way we understand our history and are beginning to learn about U.S. actions abroad in a better way, I think, has changed. But back then, there's no internet, there's no communication, nobody knows what's going on in Guatemala, they don't really care what's going on in Guatemala. And in Guatemala in particular, we're talking about Mayan Indians, so there's an ethnic racial issue here of little brown people that don't count. I think what's more astonishing, not the ethics, morality, and legality in the post-war period, and remember, it's very easy to say these are communists. These aren't banana workers, they're communists. It's the Cold War. It's Russia doing this. So therefore, you can not pay any attention to their lives, the quality of their lives, what's happening to them. What's more astonishing to me is that it can happen in the 80s and 90s and all the way up. We're in the 2000s. Remember, they're paying this trial is payments to the AUC, the cost of doing business. That's what Chiquita says, in the 2000s. And that is what's astonishing, because there is no regulation of this. There is no way the AUC, that Chiquita is being asked to consider the lives of its own workers in another country. That's dismissed as an issue. They know that these murders are going on. They know that the AUC is killing these people. They know what is happening. You can see it in their memos. But it is, as I said, considered the cost of doing business. Now, this is not legal, because you have to have, quote, normal business practices. It is not normal to hire death squads to kill labor union leaders or force peasants off their land. And that's why they got caught. Now, the sanctions, also think about it for a moment. The sanctions are probably worth the effort. They were charged $25 million by the DOJ, which found it guilty of these actions in 2007. That's just not a lot of money. And not for a company like Chiquita. So you also could do a risk assessment and say, well, you know, even if we get caught, we're not going to pay very much. That is what changed in this trial, because even though $38 million is a relatively small amount for a multinational, what happened in this case, because of the bellwether plaintiffs, is it's opened up more and more cases against Chiquita. So their ultimate losses could be in the billions.
Is agriculture and are companies like Chiquita as important in Latin America today as they were in the past?
No, I mean, it does depend on the area. It depends, for example, it is very important in Central America, and it is not surprising that Central America produces so much out-migration to Mexico, the United States, and other places, because it is still looks a lot like what you're describing or I'm describing in 1954 in Guatemala. It still looks very much like that. It's still an agricultural exporting area. But if you really look at Latin America, what counts now much more is not the export of fruits and vegetables from places like Costa Rica or Mexico. That's important. But what really, where the big money is, what I call the rents, that means excess profits. The big money is in mining minerals and all types of fossil fuels, oil. So what you see is the oil companies often, not all of them, but a company like Occidental will follow some of these same practices and embed itself with paramilitaries. But you'll also see that the big issue in Latin America today is really capturing mineral wealth and fighting mineral and oil wealth and fighting China for those resources. The key one now is lithium, which I think the country of Chile has half of the world's lithium. So what? Well, that's what our computers are run with. That's what our cell phones are run by. This is a very, very valuable energy mineral for batteries. And we'll see all kinds of issues arise with this in the future.
Thank you, Terry, for your insights into this case. The novelist J.K. Rowling, the creator of Harry Potter, once wrote, quote, "Have you any idea how much tyrants fear the people they oppress? All of them realize that one day, amongst their many victims, there is sure to be one that rises against them and strikes back," unquote. That is what has happened to Chiquita, and it looks like the best is yet to come. I'd like to thank our guest, Professor Terry Carl, for being with us today, and thank you to our viewers for joining us for another episode of The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. Please follow me on Substack, @John Kiriakou. We'll see you next time.